Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
For the first time, we're pleased to be joined in studio by the KCK school superintendent, Dr. Charles Faust. We have been looking forward to this one for quite a while, so we appreciate you taking some time out of a Monday to be here.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
We are also up on Facebook Live. For those of you, a couple of you requested that we do that. And if you miss any of the interview today, then we will certainly have this up on podcast a little bit later in the day this afternoon. First of all, I know you moved here from North Carolina, right?
Yes, North Carolina / Houston.
Did you have to cancel school as much there as we've had to cancel school here?
Not as much. In North Carolina, we would cancel sometimes because of the sleet and the snow. Houston, because of the flooding.
Oh, yeah. Do you get questions from parents about, we get them here, right? We get them all the time. Why is school canceled? Can you very briefly explain to people? I'm going to try to keep some people from calling your office, okay?
Sure.
Explain to people how the decision is made.
So we first, of course, it's not just a one person decision. So we literally look, there's a group of us, superintendents in Wyandotte County. We speak with one another and we think about first safety. Of course, can the buses handle the streets. Then we look at, you know, student drivers. In addition, can we get the parking lots clean and clear? And then there's another group of 12 individuals throughout the Kansas, like the Shawnee Mission, all of us, we're all on a call. And then we're just debating back and forth, but it's all about student safety and driver safety. And that's the biggest thing. You get it right sometimes and sometimes you don't. And it just takes time. And I know I hate doing it. And some nights, I've gotten out and driven the roads myself.
Okay.
And so it was like, no, we can't go.
Yeah, I hear you.
So let's talk about some of your biggest challenges and what you've seen. I mean, since coming here and since taking the job, what has surprised you about coming into this position in Kansas City?
So the biggest challenge for me has been, I don't want to say it's a challenge. It's just that we have, I think that we don't know what we have. That's in a good thing.
Okay.
What we've been, you know, shared, and sometimes the state thinks that, okay, it's a low performing school district and the expectation isn't there, I'll say at the state level. And so what we're doing is increasing it. And so now it's like, wait a minute, from the state, and they'll say, you know, wait a minute, they are able to do this. So it's the low expectation.
Are those low expectations on the students, on the teachers, on the school board, on you across the board? Or
I think a lot of times individuals will characterize your ability based on your socioeconomic.
Sure.
And so they put in the factors of, we have, you know, immigrants, we have low wealth, we have, you know, our median income is low, which also goes into the low wealth. And then they think that that's not true. But education and academics and wealth, I mean, the brain has the same capacity. You think about kids are born. They have the same capacity. We have to teach them. And so you set high expectations, and students will rise to the occasion.
On the kids, got it.
They will.
Speaking of kids rising to the occasion, tell us how things are doing in terms of student achievement. I know, you know, there's been some good distinction lately in terms of some progress.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Tell us more about that.
So we are literally holding everyone accountable. And so when we say everyone, we're holding myself, the cabinet, principals, teachers, students, and it goes backwards. It started, you know, last year with this move. And when I came here, I was known for doing student achievement. That's what, you know, when I think I went to school, I loved to teach. I loved to be a principal, all those things. But there was this numbers, like you have to make sure that you're able to quantify what you're doing, in my head. And so I've just always believed that kids can learn regardless of where they are in life. And so you extrapolate all of those other issues and you narrow it down. And so what we've done is literally start to pull apart in the things that don't actually factor in the school. Like low wealth, we have money in the school. Like we are able to keep you warm. We're able to feed you. We're able to provide tech, those types of things. And so we have certified teachers in our building. And so what we're doing is now providing a lot of PD for teachers through our principals. So we're setting up PD, and PD stands for professional development. We're developing principals, our leaders, and that's actually taking, it's taking a different approach in their learning. And so it's fun to see. Or it's fun to see kids learn who were told that they could not learn. And I never had that that behavior. Like, that was never a behavior that I was accustomed to, that they can't learn, because I just believe everyone has the ability to learn.
There's a constant battle that deals with the metrics that you use to figure out whether the kids are learning and whether things are improving. Do you do it by test scores? Are there other ways that you can do it? Because a lot of people feel like if you use test scores as your only metric, you're going to have teachers that only teach to a test, mm-hmm. rather than educate and have them, you know, get a sort of more holistic level of learning. So when you're trying to figure out, is what we're doing working? How is the best way in your mind to do that?
So one of the things that I have to share with everyone, in the state of Kansas, you can't teach to the test. They don't even release it. So what you have to teach to is the standard. So every school, every state has a set of curricula that provide standards. And so you have to teach to those standards. So regardless of what type of assessment is given, students are familiar with the actual information. And so what we're trying to do is just make sure that the information that they're given provides them the same opportunity as everyone else. Now, granted, you're right. That is just one triangulated portion of data, and you just don't want to be known by just a test score. However, in our world, because of the federal Every School Succeeds Act, we have to pay attention to the data. And by law, by federal, we have to be able to just do those. That so that's just one. But there are other avenues, like what are you doing in the classroom? So those are the things that you won't see on a test, that a student came in as a non-reader and now they're reading, almost on grade level, or they're doing math almost on grade level. That will not show on paper. But we're able to then say, okay, what else does this student need? In order to get him or her on grade level, because the end goal is to have everyone on grade level. When they are able to sit down in front of individuals and do a job, whether they choose to go to college or not, we want them to be successful in their career. And reading means a lot. And so just looking at where we are, and yes, we have a lot of work to do, a lot.
What do you need that you don't have to be better at this? What do you need from the state? What do you need from parents? What do you need from the community to do even better than you're doing?
So I would say from our parents, we are doing what's called a Parents as Partners. And so we're going to help our parents. We're going to help answer all of their questions and show them what we need from them. And it's literally just helping them be, I'll say, a little more aggressive towards the education or educating of their children.
Proactive.
Yes,
be a little proactive, more proactive about,
yes,
it. Yes, yeah.
Proactive. Not that they aren't, but I want them to understand that as a school district, as a state, we are bound by law to give them a quality education. And so I want them to be proactive of making sure they're stepping in and saying, hey, was this grade level material? How will my child be able to perform as a fourth grader? What is a fourth, by the end of the school year, what should he or she look like? And so being able to talk through that, that's what I want. That's what I want from the state. And I know that's different. The state gives us standards and say, okay, this is what you have to do by Fed. And, then we have the local. But I want our parents to just have a voice in the education or the educating of their children.
A lot of times we focus on the failures because it's easy to pick on.
It is.
But I'm curious about the other end of the spectrum. What do you have the facilities that you need to deal with exceptional students? Students who are two grade levels above where they should be? Because it's a district that is not swimming in cash, do you have the ability to let that student continue to grow?
We do. So one of the things that I often say about it is that, our first goal is to educate a child. And you have to do a lot of times you should be doing it in an individualized way. So oftentimes we do have those advanced courses. But what I always share with people, we're still dealing with adolescents.
It's still a 14-year-old, still a 14-year-old.
Exactly. Yeah. So regardless of how bright they are, they're still, as I call, going through their, especially that middle year, the middle school, they're still going through their first midlife crisis. They're trying to figure this thing out. And so sometimes what we do as educators is we think, okay, this child is so bright, but they're making these bad choices, or they're doing things that just don't actually... They're still a 13-year-old, they're still a 14, they're still a 16-year-old. So we have to balance sometimes to make sure that what we are teaching is age appropriate.
Definitely. All right. Coming up, we're going to go to news, but coming up after news, I want to talk about teacher vacancies in the district. It's a problem not just in Kansas City, Kansas. It's a problem all across the country with teachers getting out of teaching and how we stop that and how we get more teachers into the classroom. If you have questions for Dr. Charles Faust of the KCK School District, you can text those into 22980. We'll have more after news. It's 1:28. Let's check in with Dan. Big thanks to Dr. Charles Faust, the superintendent of the KCK School District, for spending part of his busy day in studio with us. If you have questions, text those into 22980. We are up on Facebook Live if you'd like to check us out there. And if you've missed anything, we'll have the podcast up a little bit later this afternoon. We were talking about this a little bit during the break on Facebook Live, but I wanted to spend some more time on it, about the shortage of teachers, not just in KCK schools. This is across education. Teachers are getting out. They're going to other school districts that pay more. They're just going into other sectors. They're just getting out of it. Can you explain to me a little bit the exodus, why teachers are getting out of teaching and what we need to do to keep them in or draw them in?
So I personally believe, you know, there is a across the nation, the pay is a serious issue. So I was stating before, I do believe that, you know, if our starting pay was starting somewhere around 45,000, 50,000, individuals would take a second look at us. If we were ending after working 20 plus years in the upper 60s, low 70s, people would think, okay, well, this is something that I could do. Whereas we're losing it to the private sector, where it's like, oh, come work for me, come write curriculum, come do this, or... you know, come be a consultant for us, and they get that boost. I think that has something seriously to do with it. And then, you know, burnout.
I was just about to ask about burnout. Yeah, that level.
Burnout is serious. And so what happens is individuals do not, and I want to say it's just quoting a passage from Star Teachers from Martin Haberman. You know, individuals don't go and talk to others about what's happening in the classroom. They don't go and, you know, sometimes you just have to say, I need help. Like, I need help with this lesson. I'm tired. And because everyone goes through burnout, everyone. And if you don't know that that's what you're doing, you just say, I don't like it. And so you're saying, I don't like the job. But it's actually, in some instances, burnout that you're suffering from. So I do believe having quality professional development is one way to address teacher burnout. Helping teachers recognize when they are doing great things. As you had stated earlier, you had talked about the positives. We harp a lot on the negatives.
Sure.
Everyone knows what you're not doing, but not everyone. And, you know, for the reason why I'm on a lot of stations now talking about what we're doing, it makes people feel good to say that, hey, the work that I'm doing is being noticed. And so I do believe that you have to acknowledge individuals and say that they're doing great things. And then giving them a question of how to bring the others, or helping someone bring forth ideas.
So talk about the program to get teachers trained pretty quickly. A lot of school districts do this, by the way, that if you have particular knowledge in a certain subject area, then the goal is, well, if we can just teach you some of that teaching stuff, then we can get you in the classroom. Can you address that a little bit?
Yes. So we're having to go to that. I mean, again, across the nation because of the shortage of teachers. And so, yes, if you have a degree and it's in an area, let's say if you have a history degree, and I'll just use that, or in English, you may have professional English. If you already have some of those credentials, then we've partnered with some of the local universities. Well, I don't know if they're local, but K K-State and Pittsburgh.
We'll count them as local. It's fine. Local enough.
Right.
You're good.
And so they're pairing with us. And so the state provides us with the opportunity and that university to say that you have X amount of years to get this certification. And under the guise of the school district, we provide you with mentors. We provide you also with professional development that's in that content. And so that's what we're having to do, because we are literally wanting teachers to teach. And then those individuals who sometimes it's like the second career, and it's like, you know what? I want to do this. And so we are, I'm not knocking it at all, because I believe that sometimes individuals who have a certain talent realize that, hey, I want to teach now. And so being able to do that with the universities and pair with the universities, it has provided much value for us.
I want to take a little left turn of the traffic lights here for just a second, because you and I are in a similar situation in that we're both kind of new here. Yeah. And right now, my wife is on day three of waiting for a moving truck that was supposed to be there 3 days ago. It's a nightmare. And sometimes uprooting your life and going somewhere else can be that kind of fits and starts sort of thing. How settled do you feel?
So I am fine. I am settled because, and I'll tell you this, I'm different. I love doing the work. And I was talking with an individual a couple of days ago, and I was like, you know, turnaround work, I consider easy. And he's like, say what? I was like, it's easy. When you're passionate about something, I literally go to bed thinking about this, wake up thinking about this, and I'm not at a point where, and this is 22 years for me, I love doing education.
It gets you up in the morning.
It does. It really does. I talk about it. My wife knows. She's like, just let him go. Like, he'll get sleepy in a little bit. Just let him go.
Yeah, but I mean, the rest of your life is it's gelling around what you do.
It is. I really have a boring life.
I don't believe that for a second.
It's like after work, it's like I run so hard. It's like I go home. I mean, I have family time.
Flop down on the
couch. Yes, literally, that's what it is. She's like, okay, he's down for the count. Give him a nap, and he'll get back up.
What kind of student were you?
I was a really good student. I was literally, I'll be honest, I was an advocate as a student, honestly. If I knew that a student didn't get something, I never understood why, at that time, why teachers weren't teaching. So I would turn around and like, hey, this is what you're supposed to do. Like, if you do it this way, this. Mm-hmm. And so I would sometimes, occasionally get in trouble for, you know, talking, but it wasn't talking about, you know, nonsense. It was literally talking. Or I would get offended if, for instance, like in 12th grade, we were in this college algebra class, and I loved algebra. And
are you from this planet? You loved algebra? Nobody loves algebra.
And so I swapped and did not want to do calculus and did college algebra in high school.
Okay.
And because I, you know, it's really good. Yeah.
That's like the nerd. I interrupted your story.
It's like
a
nerd talking. I remember it just clicked for him always. And I was like, I remember doing, if those math teachers out there, anyone math, it was like the matrices. So one problem would take a whole sheet of paper. And he would get it, like everything he just got. And so he would go to sleep. And so he'd get in trouble for going to sleep. But it was like he was bored, but he got it. And so where I was, you know, having to stay up at night just to hold between an 87 and a 90 in that class, like he would come in, wouldn't do homework, would ace a test, ace a quiz. And I'm thinking, well, what did you do? It's like, how did you do it? And I knew he wasn't cheating because literally, he wasn't. He was helping me at times, like, here, this is over lunch, he would share with me. So I was a great student, loved work. One of my teachers, actually, he and I actually hired him when I was a principal, and he was one of my math teachers. So he has he gave information to a reporter about it when I first got here. And
okay.
So I do keep in contact with some of my teachers. I think I only know of like two, but they are, I was good. Yeah. My parents were strict.
Yeah.
They were really strict.
Because of that history, was the doctoral path always the way you were going to go?
It was not. Honestly, so I was a double major when I first got to college. I was nursing and elementary education.
Wow.
Yeah, and so I thought once I got to, you know, chemistry and these like organic chemistry, like, okay, this or this, let's say. Let's go to the left side. So I did education, but I was torn because I wanted to do the medical route, and I was going to do PT and all this physical, mm-hmm. all this other stuff.
The organic chem is a pain in the butt.
Yeah. Yes. And so that was my trajectory. And so then the doctorate came along. It was, so I went on, and I was literally, after teaching a year, I went back and got a certification in computer programming. So that was like in 1999.
I mean, of course you did. just in case teaching didn't work out or nursing didn't work out,
had a weekend free.
Yeah,
so I have a computer, so an RPG.
How are you feeling right now, John? Good?
My life's all together right now.
So I enjoyed it. I've just enjoyed school, honestly.
Yeah.
And then I got my other master's in school administration, and then later on the doctorate. But I cared more for doing the school transformation than the doctorate. So I started my doctorate program in 2004 and was supposedly finished in 2007. And then I was recruited to go to Houston in 2010. And so in between that, had children. And so I would put that on the side, but I had to keep the schools moving. And right. So when we moved there, it was like, doctoral degree.
Before we let you go, do you feel like teaching has gotten harder since you got an education? Do you feel like we spend a lot of time on this show talking about a lot of the challenges facing schools that I feel like, at least from a student's point of view, we didn't deal with when we were in, from a student's perspective and from a teacher's perspective. Do you feel like the job has gotten harder?
I honestly believe in the educational world that our colleges have not kept up with the times of the changing times of the student.
Interesting.
So we have the same types of students, but because we're still taught some of the same curricula in college, we have not transpired or, gotten over the hump. So what we're teaching sometimes is dated. So we now have like what's called urban classrooms or urban course. I'm like, what is that?
Right.
It's a student who has always been there. But I believe that the students, the only thing I will honestly say have changed is social media.
And it's just from where we sit, we spend more time talking about bullying and the things that kids are dealing with outside of the classroom that then come to school with them in ways that it never used to.
Correct. And so what would happen is that literally you had to call someone on the telephone to get everyone revved up, and then it would come to the school, where now you hit a button on social media, everyone sees it, and it's like everyone is there. So it's the same types of, there was bullying, before social media. Within 1 second, everyone knows your business. Kids were hurting one another's feelings. Now they have a platform to do it and do it quicker. So we educators have to be a step ahead of them because they still think as, again, 13 and 14 year olds.
Right. Well, thanks a lot for being here. I'm sure we could go much longer than we did, but we appreciate you taking time out of a busy Monday to come spend time with us.
Thank you. I really
enjoyed
it.
Thanks for coming down.
Thank you. Thank you.
KCK School Superintendent Dr. Charles Faust. Again, if you missed any of that, that's up on Facebook Live. We'll have the podcast up a little bit later as well. We will wrap things up. Coming up next, it's 1:44 here on KMBZ.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.